Hello, everyone. I've popped on a couple of minutes early because I just want to make sure this is all going to work. So let me check in my group. I'm going to look on my phone and just make sure that I am live. Oh, here we go. I am. I can see that. Beautiful. Can you hear me?
In my group, I'm going
Okay,
to look on
yep,
my
that's
phone.
working. Beautiful. All right, guys, so I'm on here a couple of minutes early. I just want to be able to check that the connection is looking okay. I was testing this out before and I wasn't sure. Hi, Catherine. I wasn't sure if my video was looking okay. It actually looks okay to me. Sound looks okay. Quality looks all right. If at any point you guys can't hear me, if at any point my video drops out, my audio drops out, please let me know so I can see down the right side of my page. I can see your comments. You guys can interact with me. Hi, Sarah. Beautiful to see you. Please, yeah, as you're popping on the call, please say hello to me. Please let me know who is here with me. I can sort of see how many people are live and I can see who's joining us by talking. Now, let's just get started because it's right on 9 a.m. here in Sydney, which is our time that we're due to start. For anyone who is here live, yes, come on and say hi as you're joining. For anyone who's watching the replay is instantly available on the Facebook page after the call ends, but this is also going to be embedded on the membership page. We have a page that I'm creating that is there for live calls. Hi, Zara. Hi, Pat. Beautiful to see you guys. And I'm going to embed the video up there. Hi, Jess. Oh, so nice to see so many of you. And I'm also going to turn this into an audio only. So you'll be able to download the audio, and just like all the other audios in the program, you'll be able to listen to it on the go as well. Okay, so let me just try and get comfortable. I have like 6 pages of questions. You guys have sent me through a lot of questions, and I've got them up on a Word document on my screen here, and I've been really trying to compile them because there's a lot here. And what I've realized is that, we're only in week two of the program. We've really only started just to talk about slowing down and becoming present. We haven't started diving into a lot of our deep inner work together. So I can see a lot of the questions that are coming up for you guys are very, very much what's at the forefront of your mind. Hi, Brittany. In terms of what you're wanting to get out of this program, and that makes a lot of sense. I do feel to say, just trust that, particularly as we get into module two, and even starting this week when class three comes out at the end of this week, we will start to get into some meatier inner work that will allow you to really create shifts and changes. But just trust that we're only just easing into the program, so a lot of your quick questions will be answered as we get further in. What I also feel to say before I jump into all of the questions is that my biggest intention with this program and with my work in general, even when I work with my one-on-one coaching clients, hi Rebecca, oh my God, I'm loving seeing so many of you guys here. My biggest intention is for you to become your own guru, for you to become your own oracle, for you to be the source of the answers, and be so tuned into your own inner guidance that you can arrive at the answers in yourself. Now, I know it's early days, and I know we haven't quite got to being able to do that yet, but I say this to my coaching clients all the time, that I want to more so be the facilitator to help you arrive at your own answers and help you find your own power, your own guidance, rather than me telling you. Because that way, if I'm just telling you all the time, the power's then in me, and you need me, and you need me to be the source of the answers for you. So I really try to create a relationship in my work with the people that I support where I'm facilitating your process, but I'm not the source of anything for you, because that's not putting you in your power, is it? So look, I'm aware that with the questions that I've got, we're not quite at the place where I can just say, oh, you come up with that answer yourself. I am here to support you. But I do feel to say to you, as you're moving forward and you have questions arising in yourself, write it in your journal. Write it as a question. So say it's a question that you would think to ask me. Write it in your journal and ponder it. Give yourself a week, a few days to ponder on it. Take it on a walk with you. Ask the universe, say to your inner guidance, give me some insight, give me some clarity on this. And you'll be amazed. You'll be guided to the book that you need to read. You'll stumble across an article online. You'll be out on a walk and you'll have a realization. You'll be surprised how much when you pose a question to yourself and you give yourself the space and time to ponder on it and ask for wisdom from within, you'll be amazed the answers you can come to within yourself. So I just feel to say that moving forward, trust the wisdom that's within you. Trust that a lot of the answers are within you, but you might just need to create the space to sometimes sit on a question for a while without immediately needing to know the answer. That's just something that I want you guys to practice moving forward. But we're here, we've got like 6 pages of questions. So I'm gonna do my best to answer everything that I can. Some of them I might answer in a simplistic way, knowing that when we get to module 2, a lot of this stuff is gonna get covered, particularly module 3 as well. So where I want to begin is talking about what I've got up here. And if you see me looking over, it's because I've got my Word document next to me. I've got quite a few questions that have come up about surrender, uncertainty, the unknown, and dropping control. And I'm going to start there because it's a very relevant conversation to the current energetic climate that we're in August. As much as a lot of this is covered in module 3 of the course, I feel like this is a very relevant conversation right now. So I personally am moving through huge change in my life. I mean, a lot of unknown, huge uncertainty, a lot of lack of clarity, and a lot of surrender is needed. So if any of you are feeling that in this current time, what I feel to say about August is this is not a time to be locking things in and expecting to get rock solid certainty about anything. We are in unstable energetic times. We are in the midst of eclipses. I do feel September will be a time when things will really land and solidify. For now, I want to encourage you to let yourself be in the unknown, to let things be unclear, let things be messy, let things be chaotic. That is the energy that we're in. And the way that, sorry, I hope you don't mind, I've got a guy outside putting the bins away. I can hear him, but hopefully this headset blocks out some of that noise. Now I've lost my train of thought. Yes, let yourself be in the unknown. Let it be unclear. Let it be uncertain. Okay, I lost my train of thought with that. Let's get on to the questions. All right, so a couple of the questions that you guys have asked around this is, how do we know that we'll be taken care of? How do we allow ourselves to feel vulnerable when we don't know what's going to happen? How do we let things be messy? How do we deal with all of the feelings that arise in the uncertainty, the fear, the anxiety and nervousness about the uncertainty? How do we stop the mind trying to take over control? And I've also got another question about how do we allow ourselves to surrender when we feel sick? So how do we surrender to the body? So my process with this has been, and we're going to start talking about this in class 3, is to really witness and watch what it looks like when you're in a state of control, what it feels like when you are trying to control things where it's like sand is running through your fingers, like you actually can't control it, but you're really trying to. And I want you to witness what goes on around you inside of that, what goes on inside of you around that. I want you to feel all of the feelings that come up around not knowing. And what I feel like this process is a deconstruction of the ego. So when you put the ego in a place, in a situation in life where it actually has no power because it can't control anything, it almost forces the ego to let go and begin to unravel. So this is actually a real process this month of deconstructing a lot of our ego. For me, I'm going through a change around my home, and I am due to move out of my apartment next week, and I currently don't know where I'm moving. I don't have a new home as yet. And I've spent the past 3 to 4 weeks apartment hunting like a crazy lady. I'm on Domain, which is our rental app here in Australia. I'm refreshing every hour, like, where's the next apartment? What apartment can I go and view? I have been in a state of control. So first of all, don't judge yourself. If control is playing out, if you have a lot of fear, okay, you might sometimes follow that. I have been following my ego at times, and I've needed to, because it's been very powerful, and I've almost needed to follow it in order to have the real life experience of how ineffective it is when I run that pattern. My sleep has been affected. I have been in a state of anxiety, and I've not actually as yet, from 3 to 4 weeks of living in control, created the outcome that I want. So sometimes you kind of need to learn the hard way. Sometimes you do need to follow the ego a little bit, experience, okay, when I follow the fear-driven story, when I act from control, what happens? And sometimes you need to learn the hard way and experience that and be like, okay, that's quite ineffective. So I came into a place this week where I just decided to let go, like almost like give up. And sometimes that's what surrender feels like. When you just say, do you know what? I'm going to completely give up on this. I'm going to let go of even wanting to know. I'm going to let go of even trying to figure it out. I'm going to let this whole thing just fall apart. And then you start to sit with, okay, what's the worst case scenario that my mind has given me? And so I'm literally sitting in myself being like, okay, next Friday, I move out of here. Worst case scenario is I have nowhere to go. And I started sitting with that, and I felt all the anxiety, and I was like, oh, that's pretty uncomfortable. And then my mind was like, you know, worst case scenario, Con, just go get an Airbnb for a few days. Like, why don't you do that? And I was like, I could do that. Like, that's not that bad. I mean, it's not ideal, but it's not that bad. So when you really look at what is the worst case scenario, and you kind of go, that's actually not so bad, it helps drop some of the fear that you have around all these bad things that are going to happen if you can't control everything. It's also really forced me to live in the present moment. So many of us are being put in unknown at the moment because it is helping us live in the present moment. Like right here, right now, I am here with you on a live call. That is all I need to do. Right here, right now, I have a roof over my head. I have food in the fridge. I'm sweet, right? So why don't I just be here with you and enjoy this moment, be fully here? I don't need to worry about next Friday just yet. The other thing that I feel to say is there's always a divine plan, always. But the thing your ego won't like is that it will be different to what the ego wants. It won't maybe be as neat and tidy. And the ego is really adamant. It's like, no, my way or the highway. And what I'm sensing in the energy at the moment is there is a divine plan, but we're not all being shown it just yet. Like, I feel like I'm walking blindfolded. I have no like effing idea really what's going on. Usually I can sense the plan. I can't sense the plan at the moment. I don't know what's going on. But there is a divine plan. So for example, last weekend, I was walking back from viewing some apartments. Just as I walked past this door, the door opened and out came my friend Emily. And I was like, oh, that's so strange. I walked past her house in this exact moment that she walks out. She's like, come up for a cup of tea. I said, okay. We're having a chat. And I said to her, you know, I've been viewing these apartments and it's just like nothing's coming through. She said, well, Connie, I'm going to be away for all of September. Do you want to stay at my place? And I was like, wow, what are the chances of me walking past her apartment in the moment she opens the door and her saying, hey, I'm going to be away for a month. Do you want to stay at my place? Now, my mind doesn't like that. My mind is like, I don't want to just be staying at friends' houses, but there's a divine plan. And if I can drop my plan and say, I want you to notice, where are you getting doors closing and roadblocks? because that's what I've been pushing at my plan and doors have just been closing. And that's when you've got to step back and say, okay, the universe is saying no to that. But a door's opened over here, which is different to what I was expecting, which is different to what I think I want, but the door's opening. And I was chatting with my friend Em, and I said, Em, you know, I really didn't think this is what I wanted to do, but when I tune into it, it just feels really light. It just feels really easy. And she said, yeah, I feel the same way, Con. And I was like, okay, well, let's just follow that then. So notice what feels heavy and forceful. Notice what feels easy. Notice where the universe is blocking you. Pay attention to that. Notice where doors are opening. This is how you surrender. You definitely take all the action you can take. Like, I've been taking action like a crazy lady, but I've also had to pay attention. Where does it feel like I'm pushing and forcing? And where does it feel like the universe is flowing? And then that's where you're being guided to go. So when it comes to dealing with the vulnerability, when it comes to dealing with the messiness, you just feel that shit. Sorry, sometimes I swear when I get excited on live group coaching calls. In my previous group, the Transformation Project, I used to drop the F-bomb all the time. I'm going to try to not do that, but I get really excited on these calls. And every time I intercept myself, I lose my train of thought. Isn't that funny? Now I can't remember what I was saying. I love the way this happens. It's totally gone. Isn't that so funny? Okay. All right, let's just leave that. If anyone wants to tell me what I was just saying, that would be really useful. Yes, how do we deal with the uncomfortable feelings? You feel it. You feel it. So there have been numerous times I've had to sit in myself and cry and feel anxiety and feel the vulnerability and feel the fear and get angry at life, being like, why aren't you cooperating with me? Why aren't you doing what I want you to do? But it's not. So you feel all of that. And we're going to start talking in the next couple of weeks about how do we feel our feelings? How do we really, and we talked about this in class too, how do we hold space for our reactions when life, hi Natasha, when life doesn't go according to our plan, when things feel uncomfortable, when the ego is like fired up, being like, no, this isn't what I want. This doesn't feel good. This is wrong. We do what we spoke about in class too, like with the apple analogy. When you're in your reaction, it's right here. Imagine putting that emotion on the other side of the table, the other side of the room, and hold space for it and say, okay, right now life is not going according to my plan. Right now I'm terrified. Right now I don't know what's going to happen. Right now I feel like the worst case scenario is going to unfold. Let me feel that. If I can get through this, imagine how strong and resilient and powerful I'm going to become. All this is happening to show you just how powerful you are, how resilient you are, how strong you are, how much you are capable of, how much you can handle. Hold space for your emotions. Love and support yourself through it. Ask for support from people. But that's what I encourage as we're riding through this energetic climate. Okay. So I know I spent a lot of time on that conversation, but I feel like this is important because this is coming up a lot at the moment. And use the practices I've been talking about. You know, I posted in the Facebook group yesterday that I'm creating these little pockets of space for myself where I will just sit on the floor with my sage, my Palo Santo, a cup of tea or cacao, my music, and I just spend 10 minutes just breathing into my body and recentering. I take myself on walks. I've been having a midday bath, like a bath at midday every day. Just my guidance is saying I need that for myself. So we really need big self-care during times of uncertainty and change. But just be wary of your mind feeling like something's gone wrong, because nothing's gone wrong. Just because something looks different to what you expect, just because life is unfolding differently to how you think it needs to happen, does not mean anything has gone wrong. And really keep reminding yourself you are being guided, even if right now you can't see it. I really feel in September everything's going to start to clarify for us. I want to just touch on, one woman's asked about receiving. I just quickly want to touch on this for her. If any of you feel like you have discomfort around receiving, you know, this woman was asking, how do I let myself be cared for by others or even feel like life is caring for me? I want you to notice this, and presence is a beautiful way to notice this. Life is always taking care of you. Always. Right now, like, I can see sun coming in. That sun is life. That sun is taking care of me. Nature is taking care of me. I have a roof over my head. There is money in my bank account. We are always being taken care of. Always. There is always food available to us. There is people available to us. And if you can actually tune your eyes to see and focus on all of the ways you are being taken care of, all of the ways all your needs are met, all of the blessings and abundance that is coming your way in every single moment. You know, let's turn off the lack mentality. Let's turn on the mentality where we see what is working, how we are loved and supported and guided, how all our needs are being met, the abundance that is around us at all times. Let's tune our focus to that. And when, so that's one way I practice receiving, is I imagine myself receiving from life. And I look at all of the ways life is delivering to me in this moment. It's delivering everything that I need. Nature delivers so much to us. And we don't stop to appreciate that, how much life is giving to us in every moment and how taken care of we are. And for this particular woman who's saying she's feeling uncomfortable receiving from other people, just set an intention around that. I remember when my father passed away, I really struggled with receiving love and support from people. I began to witness the way I would shut down to that, but I just kept holding the intention. And I just, every time an opportunity would present to practice receiving, I set the intention to practice that. And to say, okay, Connie, here's an opportunity. Even though you feel uncomfortable letting someone come over to your house and bring you food and give you a gift and want to take care of you, even though that's uncomfortable, I want you to practice that anyway. So seek out opportunities to practice the things that are areas of growth for you. Get excited when there's an opportunity to practice surrender. Get excited when there's an opportunity to practice receiving, if there are things that you find difficult to do. And yes, they're going to be uncomfortable because they're foreign, but it's practice. It's putting yourself in those situations over and over again and getting used to it. And there's a lot here to this woman's question around feeling worthy to receive. But I really feel like the starting point is put yourself in those places where you're uncomfortable and practice a new way of being in those situations. So as you guys can probably tell, I try to answer really concisely and I just can't. So this is my problem. I answer really in depth to every question. But let's just keep moving forward because I've got a lot here. And you know, in terms of how do we not give in to the ego that always wants to be in control, that's one of the questions. Practice giving into the ego and witness what happens. There's nothing wrong with sometimes following your ego. Like, let's not all be like, oh my God, I can't be in my ego. No, look, sometimes it's going to be there. Sometimes it's going to take you over. But follow it and see what happens and notice how it feels. And if you notice you follow control and it doesn't feel good, then you can step back and be like, ooh, that doesn't feel good. I'm not going to do that anymore. And when it comes in to pull you again, you're going to be able to stop and say, no, I know what happens when I follow that. It doesn't feel good. So I'm not going to follow that anymore. So sometimes let it take you over. Follow it. See what happens. That's how we actually learn. But if we sit there paralyzed being like, is this my ego? Is this my inner guidance? We never do anything. I've sort of had to just follow the impulse that's there. And then that's how I get more clarity on which one is my intuition and which one is my ego. Again, another question here around how do we surrender when we're sick. I had to coach a client through this recently. She was she had a lot of stuff going on with work and she was sick. Again, it's the ability to feel the discomfort of your reaction to that. So if you feel guilt, if you feel out of control, if you feel uncomfortable when you listen to your body that says, I need to rest, and your ego is sitting there yelling at you the whole time and making you feel guilty, again, hold space for that reaction. And make a choice. Like we're going to talk about this in class 3, where we get to witness the mind a little bit and start to choose what we want to have going on in there. So when you're not choosing, you'll just get lost in the story of guilt. When you're choosing, you can step back and be like, okay, I've chosen to listen to my body today, but there's a story of guilt here. Let me witness that. What is my ego telling me? Let me feel that in my body. What arises in my body when that plays out? Okay, I'm going to hold space for that. But what does my body say to me? What does my inner guidance say to me? What does my heart and soul say to me? It says, sweetheart, stay in bed. Honor your body and rest. So then you just keep tuning back into that voice. It's a real practice, but this is where we come into our power, is when we stop just letting the ego take us over and we're able to witness it a little bit more. That's what I really want you guys to be able to do in module 1. A question here, how do we slow down when we have deadlines and an inflexible work schedule? This is a similar kind of thing. Yeah, you know, slowing down is not always about canceling all your plans. And I have so many commitments, guys. Like, I'm committed to you guys every week now to get content out to you. The whole course has been mapped out, but I am recording and creating a lot of these resources week by week. And, you know, I've got commitments like coming onto this group coaching call. I've got things I've got to honor. I've got coaching clients I've got to honor. There are sometimes I do cancel things. If I truly, truly feel I can't show up for it, I will cancel something. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. If you feel that the most important thing you can do in that moment is really honor yourself, and if you know that if you push beyond what you're feeling, it's going to be completely ineffective anyway, there's nothing wrong with canceling and saying no. It's actually a very powerful form of self-love. But slowing down doesn't always necessarily mean you have to change your schedule. I want you to think about slowing down being about who are you being. It's not just about what you're doing. Think about your relationship to everything. Think about how are you feeling as you're doing what you're doing. We're going to talk about this in class 4. So you can still have a busy schedule, but you can be bringing in practices that allow you to be more present, to be focused, more focused on your breath and breathing deeply and be in your body. You can bring in little things like a lavender essential oil, a cup of herbal tea, some soft, gentle music. You can give yourself permission to take a break every half an hour to just go for a little walk and take 5 deep breaths. You can do what I do, which is even though my schedule is chock-a-block, I still let myself take 10 minutes to sit on the floor and listen to some music and breathe into my body. So this doesn't mean you have to clear your whole schedule, but it does mean being in your power and in charge of your inner state and your emotional well-being and who you're being as you're showing up in your life. So think about what helps you slow down and soothe your own energy, what helps you feel calm, and then integrate those things into your life so that you're working on your energy system. And if you know, this woman's saying I'm at uni part-time and I work part-time. When you're working part-time, if you practice presence, if you are fully present when you're there, everything does start to slow down. You would have noticed that if you've done the presence exercise. When you're fully where you are, you do actually have spaciousness. Your energy system does start to slow down. So practice being fully present to where you are and integrate just tiny, small little things into your day that soothe your energy while you're doing what you're doing. Don't underestimate the power of just 5 deep breaths to recenter you. Question, I know I'm like zipping through stuff here, but like I'm on page 2 and I've got 6 pages of questions. So I'm really trying to get through this quickly, even though I know I go into quite a bit of depth. Question for the upcoming call, how do we introduce playfulness along with presence? I'm way too serious for my own good. I was reflecting on this the other day, actually. I was walking down the street yesterday and, you know, I'm in crazy change, overwhelm, stress at the moment. But I was just watching nature as I was walking down the street. And there was this beautiful warm breeze in the air. And I was watching the trees as the leaves were dancing. And I was noticing the color of the leaves. And I was smelling the beautiful scent of the air. And I was just looking at everything. And I was on my way to go view an apartment, actually. But I was walking slowly. And I was just tuning in. And in that moment, my heart felt so light with joy. It didn't feel serious. It didn't feel heavy. It felt like that beautiful light joy, little bubbles of joy in the top of my chest. And that's actually your natural state of being. So presence can become serious when we sort of make it something that is spiritual or important and we like, I better practice presence. But when you actually just tune into the beauty of life, there's a real light joyness to that. That's your natural essence. The other thing is, if you want to introduce more playfulness into your life, set that as an intention. Really think about, what does playfulness mean to me? What would it look like to practice playfulness? Does it mean that I giggle more? You know, for me, when I go over to get my coffee in the morning, I have a little banter with my barista, and that's a little place where I practice playfulness. It's fun. We have a little joke. He makes a joke about my order every day because I change my order up every day. And it's this little joke that we have. And you can introduce little bits of playfulness into your life if you think about, what does that look like? What would it look like if I was being playful? How do I want to practice that? And you know, be playful, like put on a song and dance like a goof. Dance like an idiot around your living room and have fun with that and shake your bum and just be silly, you know. So look for little ways that you can integrate that, set that as an intention and maybe carry that into your day. Go outside and start skipping. Skip in front of people, you know, dance on the street if you're listening to music, you know, sing out loud. There's a lot of different ways that you can integrate that into your life if you set that as an intention. How do we know when we're overdoing it with our spiritual practice? This might actually relate into the playfulness thing. So I've used this week as an excuse to close up from the world and stay in my cave, in my little me time at home, which feels very calming and nourishing. But sometimes that makes me feel lonely, and I feel like sometimes my spiritual practice disconnects me from the world and from other people. It also affects me relating to other people because I'm judging them as not being spiritual or conscious enough, you know, so that's something that she's processing. I've experienced this a lot on my journey as well. What I want you to keep in mind, I've been practicing this as well through this month of surrender. Everything's temporary. If you can remember that, just like the seasons, like I love nature analogies for anything spiritual. Everything is temporary. And so what the mind does when we're going through a little phase of wanting to feel introverted, it's very, very common, particularly around, I know where we're at in August, that there's a desire to really be looking inwards and spending time alone and being in our safe space. The mind starts going, you're going to be like this forever. You're going to become a recluse. You're never going to have any friends. It really... It loves to lock things in as being permanent, whereas the spirit is constantly changing, just like the seasons, nature, everything's constantly in flux. So trust that this is a phase. If you truly feel at the moment that you're in a phase of wanting to be quite internal, honor that and trust that. But at the same time, and I've had to do this a little bit with myself, consciously start to think about, okay, well, if I want to create some opportunities to bring in a bit more balance and come out of my little spiritual cave a little bit, what would I love to see myself practicing that feels like some connection? Who are the types of people I want to connect with? Where do those people hang out? What am I really craving? And ask yourself that question. Put that in your journal and say, what would I like to practice to experience some more connection and come out of the house a little bit more? And I know for me, sometimes it's, you know, getting in touch with friends and organizing a dinner, organizing a catch up. Oh, I just thought, oh, Catherine, you stayed up so late. I promise that the next time I'm going to flip it so that it's my evening, so that for some of my UK girls, you can come and see it in the morning. But thanks for being here, Catherine. You go to bed and get some sleep. I lost my train of thought again. This is a good sign. This shows me I'm in the flow when I can't remember what I was saying. See you later, sweetheart. My God, isn't it so funny? Like, it literally, my mind just goes blank. Yes. So sometimes it means getting in touch with some friends and organizing a dinner. Sometimes it means booking into yoga classes, a gym class where I can go out and be around just some people's energy. For me, sometimes it means going to my local library and working there or working at a cafe. So honor what you're feeling if you are feeling like a lot of internal time, but then ask yourself the question, okay, if I want to experience more connection, if I want to be out in the world a little bit more, what would that look like for me? What feels good? And where do the people that I want to connect with, where do they hang out? I always encourage my clients to do this, and I did this a few years ago when I didn't have any like-minded friends. I would just book into any workshop I could find. I was always looking for workshops, events, yoga classes, meetup groups. I was looking for anything I could find where people who were similar to me would hang out, and I would consciously go and put myself in the place where those people would hang out, and I would set the intention that I would talk to at least one person. And so, yeah, I had to get outside my comfort zone, and sometimes I really didn't want to go, but I would go along to these things and I would strike up conversation with someone. And that, like, I'd moved back to Melbourne. So I was back in Melbourne and I didn't have any like-minded friends. And I really pushed myself to go to anything and everything I could find. And I met amazing people. So yeah, sometimes you need to give yourself a little nudge outside your comfort zone and really think about where those people that you want to connect with will hang out and go and put yourself around them. Excuse that, the dog outside. This woman also asks, when I'm dating, I want to find a man who's a conscious leader. So do I. And who has dealt with the stories of his past. Yes, I can relate to that. However, most of the time I jump to a quick conclusion that they're victims of the career happening to them or not working on their own mindfulness, and hence they're not good enough. Quick little point here on dating. You know, what I've come to learn is, I was talking to a client about this yesterday, just be really open when it comes to meeting new people. Be aware of the spiritual high horse, where we're like, oh, you're not conscious enough for me. Or, you know, if you notice someone else triggering you, take responsibility for what it's triggering in you. That can be something to witness. And if you keep manifesting the same type of man, dig a little deeper into what it is that might be going on in you that's attracting you to that type of man, or is causing you to manifest that type of guy. One thing I've noticed is that the more I've let my true self be seen to men, the more I attract men who are in alignment with my true self. So I used to go on dating apps and just have these pretty photos of me, but not really show that I was deep and conscious and spiritual, because I wanted to hide that part of me away. And so I would attract men who were only attracted for this facade that I would put out, and then I'd later realize I didn't have the depth that I wanted. The more, and this goes to friendships as well, the more that you be yourself, the more that you let people see who you really are, the more you'll come into alignment with people who are a match to that, right? Because how can these like-minded men or women find you if they don't know you've got that aspect to you? You know, I often have people say, how do I find my kind of spiritual running buddies, my spiritual soulmate friends, my soul sisters? And I'm like, well, when people meet you, do they know that you've got this soulful side to you? Do you let them see right away that this is who you are, because unless they can see it in you, they're not going to know that you guys actually have these similarities. So for me, with men, it's about being very upfront and transparent about who I am, about how I see the world. The more visible I've become in my authentic self, the more I attract men who are a beautiful mirror image. I'm starting to attract some really conscious, high vibe men. I never used to. I used to always attract men who had like drinking problems and were superficial and who would just work in their day jobs and then be like, oh my God, thank God it's Friday. And I was like, depressing. But now I'm attracting men who are entrepreneurs, who are conscious, who are spiritual, who we meet up and we have these amazing conversations, because I'm much more visible and transparent in letting that part of me be seen. Okay. I'm just like powering through, guys. Question. Is it typical for the ego to shout louder in order to stop the process of tuning in? Yeah, I commented on this in the Facebook group as well, and the answer is yes, absolutely. So the ego will, when you start to come on this consciousness journey, the ego gets louder, and it will try to regain its power and control as much as it can. Understand that the ego, and look, we haven't fully got into this yet. I think we will talk about this a lot more in module two. If, you know, some of you may kind of be like, what is she talking about when she says the ego? I really see that as being like your human construct, your human self, your human identity. So we kind of look at it as being like your ego is everything that you've learned about yourself as me, Connie. My human identity, all my memories, my past experiences, my physicalness. I am Connie. I am a life coach. I live in this apartment. I'm doing this. The other side of that, your true self, your true essence, your higher self, your authentic self, your intuitively guided self is so much more than that. It is the part of you that is eternal. It is the part of you that is connected to all things. It is the energetic essence of who you are that is not defined by labels, right? So when you start to come more into that part, the ego doesn't like it, because it's like, well, I don't know who I am as this. Because the ego is very much the I am this. And as you start to deconstruct parts of yourself, the ego has nothing to hold on to. And it freaks out. Also understand, the more conscious you become in yourself, like the more conscious your ego becomes, because it's a part of you. The more evolved it becomes, the smarter it becomes. So its tricks become a lot more subtle. It will shout louder, and you will get a lot of backlash as you really start to step into your power. And anytime you go to expand, anything that is within you that is preventing you from fully stepping into that will be illuminated. It will rise up to the surface so you can really see it and witness it and be like, oh, there's that and that pattern that needs to be cleared, so that I can step fully into my expansion. So when stuff gets triggered, again, don't be hard on yourself. Don't be like, oh, I'm a failure. Something's gone wrong. This shouldn't be happening. Instead, be like, get curious. Look at what has arisen in me. I wonder what this is about. I wonder where this came from. I wonder why I don't want to let this go. There'll be stuff about the ego that makes you feel safe. It will feel familiar. It will feel like it gives you a sense of certainty about who you are. I talk about a little bit about this in class three this week. We're talking a lot about the mindset this week and the mind's stories, and how to really shift out of some of the patterns of the mind. So yeah, you will have a big backlash. And your process is to witness that, hold space for it, feel it, but not continue to engage, and continue, sorry for the dog outside, you can probably hear, continue to redirect your focus onto the true self, where you're being called to go, the true essence of you that is actually... It doesn't have to attach to a label. It can reinvent itself. You can be anything you want. It's only the mind and the ego that decides you have to be something based on who you've been in the past. The true self says, be whatever you want, recreate yourself, create any possibility for yourself. Your energy, you can mold that energy into anything. But the ego doesn't like that because it feels unknown. So yeah, you will have it shout louder. Absolutely. How, as an empathic person, can we detach from the craziness around us? You know, obviously, guys, far out. Like at this time that I'm recording this, our world is crazy. We got some crazy ass shit going down. Like, politically, it's a really, really scary time. So empaths, we feel it. And we feel a lot of, sorry, that dog is really annoying. We feel a lot of not only the collective stress and fear, but we feel, you know, the fear and stress of our friends and family members. We feel everything. And so a lot of empaths have shut down. And if you're like me, I don't watch the news because I can't deal with it. You know, if I see anything about cruelty to animals, to humans, to nature, my heart, I literally get a visceral feeling of it breaking. I don't know how to deal with the pain, the immense ache I get from watching our world suffer. So yes, my tendency as well has been to shut it out. So how do we become engaged in a positive way? I think we stay informed without being inundated. We stay informed without over-consuming to the extent that our nervous systems can't even take on board what we're being fed, because the media will first off give you the information and then they'll just give you the same information over and over and over with more and more and more fear on top of it. Have you noticed that? I remember when, like, we've had different things happen in Australia sometimes that they thought were little terror attacks, and they'll give you the information and then they'll spend the whole day rehashing the same information and then making it sound so much worse. So get your information, find good sources, good media sources that don't add extra fuel to the fire, but actually just give you the details of what's unfolded, and then find out what you can do that will constructively contribute. These days, a lot of people are creating opportunities for us to either donate money or go and petition or go to an event or write a letter, sign off on something that will help us feel like we have a voice, we are contributing. If you want to have a voice for something, you can jump on something like Facebook Live. I remember after Trump was elected, I woke up with a very strong feeling that I needed to say some stuff. And I did a little riff about leading from love. That was my inner feeling of how I could put some love out onto the internet when there was so much fear. So get your little bit of information, and then know that you are here to contribute from love. Don't contribute to the fear. If you sit and worry, you're adding energy to the fear. Asking yourself, how can I lead from love? How can I add love to this situation? How can I be a force of change? How can I contribute and help? And then see what answer arises in you from that and look for opportunities to be able to do that. But also, you know, as empaths in general, we do need to have energetic boundaries. We do need to be really careful about how much we take on board because we feel everything so strongly. Question here, how about the fear of being seen in an era where social media, so I understand these questions, just so I can say, we'll be jumping around off topic, but I've literally just put them all in a Word document, which is why I'm jumping from different things, and I trust that you guys won't mind that. When I embed the live call up on the site, what I might do is list off all the questions that I covered so you can jump to different points of the video. Fear of being seen. I judge myself as not being good enough. I know comparison is a form of lack. How do I overcome it when I compare myself to other people in my industry? This beautiful woman said, I feel like the answer is something like slow down and connect to your inner truth, but I can feel it in my head and not in my heart. Look at that right there though. That is beautiful intuitive wisdom. Slow down and connect your inner truth. I did a podcast on comparison a few months ago, and one of the key things I said in there, and this is what my inner guidance said to me, was your only job is to follow the inner call of your own unique soul. Put the blinkers on. Your only job is to follow your inner call. That is your purpose of life. Follow your inner instructions. Follow the unique blueprint of what your soul is here to do in the world. Follow the inner insights and impulses that are flowing from within you. We'll talk about this a lot in module two, how we're either pulled by the external or we're guided from within. It's one or the other. So when you go into comparison, first of all, look at the things that trigger comparison and see if you can remove some of those. So I know for me, for example, when I was writing this course, guys, so Slow Down and Tune In was completely downloaded from my higher source and guided from within. And as I was writing the course, I was watching a lot of other people start to launch and create online programs. I was watching some people talk about this conversation of slowing down, and I started to compare. And I started to think, is mine going to be good enough? Has this conversation already been said? You know, will people even like what I have to say? Blah, blah, blah. So I eliminated all of the things that triggered that. I actually stopped consuming other people's material. I stopped watching other people's Insta stories. I stopped looking at other people's creations, and I put the blinkers on. Like, I mean, like horse blinkers, you know, like a horse. I talk about this in my podcast, the horse running a race. All it can see is its vision. All it can see is its end outcome. That's it. It's not looking to the side. It can't. That's why horses wear blinkers. So they intentionally can't look to the side, because everyone knows that will distract the horse and it won't be able to focus on where it needs to go. So eliminate distractions. Really watch and observe what triggers you and pulls you off your path. I have a few women in my industry who are dear friends. I love them. They're like my best friends. But they trigger the F out of me. And I can't consume their work because I just compare myself to them. Occasionally I look to them as role models and I feel really inspired. But when I'm in the process of birthing something, I consciously choose to not look at what they're doing. And instead, I go into stillness in myself and I listen. And I listen for what my own unique soul is telling me I am here to do. And that's when I kept tuning in and I was just like, she's saying, slow down and tune in. She's saying, I've got to birth this course. And I listened to her for 9 solid months. That's how long it took me to get all this stuff out. It was a huge process. And yeah, I doubted myself so many times. But I just kept creating the space to go in and listen. And that is your only job. Yeah, step out of and understand whatever anyone else is doing is, again, them following their unique soul. And that's their purpose. You're not here to be like someone else's, like someone else, or you're not here to live someone else's life path. That's their life path that their soul has given them. So let them live it. Your only job is to listen to what your soul wants to do. That's what this whole journey is about, is guiding you deeper inward so that you can listen to that voice and act on that and eliminate all of the external distractions. So when we have getting triggered, not good enough, that's when you're making it about you. I know we don't really like to hear that, but you're making it about you. And this was a big wake-up call for me when I realized the thing that was stopping me showing up for my work was where I was making it about me. And am I pretty enough? Am I successful enough? Is my branding nice enough? Will people think that I'm an expert or a success? Whatever. It was all about me. Now, if I had made this whole course about me, you and I wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be on this call. I'd still be sitting in the corner I'd still be sitting in the corner making it about me. I'd still be sitting in the corner being like, am I good enough? Can I do it? And all of you would be missing out on this incredible journey with me. So we need to understand when we make it about us, we intercept our purpose. We can't serve. the world misses out on what our soul has told us we are here to do, on the reason you are on this planet. And yes, I still have a fear of being seen. I hate being on video. I really hate it. But if my soul says be on video, then I have to honor that. That's been my own personal process of committing to, thanks, Pat. I'm glad you don't mind the F-bombs. They just slip out sometimes. I just am aware I have a mix of people and it may not be for everyone. happened again. Isn't it so funny how much I lose my train of thought? This is why I can't get distracted. Yeah, but I think I made my point around that. The fear of being seen, that's right. One of my key things for overcoming the fear of being seen is to really see myself. Practice seeing yourself. Really do things that make you visible. Do some work in the mirror. Really look in your own eyes. Really connect with yourself. Really see everything about you that's magnificent. Stop focusing on what about you isn't good enough. Stop focusing on what you think you're lacking and start actually looking for the things about you that are valuable and amazing. And trust that it's going to be uncomfortable. Every single step I take in my business is uncomfortable. Do you have any idea how vulnerable I felt when I launched this course? Like gut-wrenching vulnerability, putting my deepest like soul-based creation out into the world and saying, hey guys, do you like it? Like so vulnerable. But this woman talking about she's a yoga teacher. Well, if you are here to serve others through yoga, there might be times you make mistakes. There might be times you stuff up a class. Embrace that. That's all part of the learning journey. I make mistakes all the time. All right. I'm getting there. Let's see if we can skip through some of these questions. Do I have any exercises for being more open in our mind and heart? I have a perfectionist mentality, and when life doesn't look a certain way, I close down, shut down, and become unhappy. So this is kind of what I was talking about right at the start, isn't it? I was talking about how in my life at the moment, my plan isn't working at all. Life is not going according to my plan in August. Things are really not going how I want or expect. And I've noticed myself getting really angry, and I've let myself get angry. I've let myself have a few moments where I've screamed at the ceiling and said, life, why aren't you supporting me? Like, I'm so angry. And I let myself get really upset about that. But it is your process to listen and to take yourself out on walks, to sit in meditation sometimes, to sit in the bath. That's what I do. And I just listen and I just say, okay, Connie, just listen. Is there any guidance? What can you feel life is trying to show you? What if life does actually know better than you? And the ego doesn't like that. The ego doesn't like to think that anyone knows better than itself. But I sort of have said, what if life knows better for me than I do? I had to go through this when my dad passed away. I sat in a lot of moments of anger, like life, like you're wrong. Like, why'd you take my dad? I don't agree with you at all. And I think that was the wrong thing to do. But then I sat there and I was like, what if life knows better than me? And what if life chose to take him at this moment because, oh, sorry, I better be careful talking about this. I'll get emotional. What if life chose to take him at this point because it was part of the divine plan, a plan that I can't see or understand, but is part of a bigger picture to my life? And there are bigger lessons and learnings and experiences that need to happen as a result of this, which right here in this moment I can't see, but maybe later will be revealed to me. So it is a real practice. It is difficult, but I want you to I like to do some journaling about it, and I like to really write it out. Okay, well, here's what I think I want. Here's what I think is right. Here's my plan. I write that out and then I just open up and I pay attention to life and I ask, you know, am I getting the green light on this? Are doors opening? Are things flowing? Do I feel like me and the universe are working together? So for example, for me, like I had two apartments over the past few months, no, past few weeks that I really, really wanted. And I was really adamant these were the right apartments for me. And both of them fell through. And I got really shitty about it. And so I was writing out and I was like, my plan is an apartment falls in on this date. This is what we do. We go set it up, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote out my plan and then I was like, is life working with me on this? Is this flowing? And I had to step back and I was like, do you know what? It's not. Right now, doors are closing around that. Right now, I'm getting no. Right now, I'm hitting barriers. Okay, well, let me listen to that. And then I journal over here and I'm like, what do I think life is trying to show me? Where do I feel like there is an opening? Where do I feel like there's ease? Where do I feel like there's flow? And as much as I really don't want to hear it, what I'm getting is, Connie, just one more temporary space. Don't make any decisions until September. That's what my guidance is saying. And I don't want to hear that, but they're like, the energy is too unstable. We don't want you locking anything in until September. So if you need to take a temporary place for the next few weeks, please know it's only temporary and trust that in September, clarity will drop in. So I open up and I ask for and I reach for anything I can feel for that feels like there's a flow and openness and ease, a yes energy to it. And that's what I choose to follow. It's a difficult practice. But if you do become angry and upset when life doesn't go your way, let yourself feel that. Like I said, I've had a lot of outbursts. And I let that energy come out and then I just come back into my self-care and I listen again and say, okay, things aren't going according to my plan. There must be a bigger plan that I can't understand. Show me the way. Got another question here about comparison. I did touch on that before. This point though, around someone feeling like I'm unhappy with where I'm at in my life and I'm comparing my life to other people, again, I would say put the blinkers on and really get to work on making your life, I really want to drop an F-bomb, the best fucking version that you can find of your own life. Sorry, sometimes I just get really like, it's the only word that I can find that really emphasizes how I feel. Like, stop looking at what other people are doing because that's their plan, that's their life. Use it as inspiration if you want. But look at every area of your life, relationships, career, travel, creativity, your own personal growth, your home, your body, whatever it is, and really write out, like, what would it look like to have this area of my life be like the richest, juiciest, most fulfilling, most fun, most abundant, beautiful version of that area of my life that I can possibly imagine. When you get on with really focusing on your own life and you get so excited about your own life, you literally don't give a shit what anyone else is doing. Like half the time, guys, I am so psyched about my own life, about being on purpose, about what I'm working on. I don't have time to scroll social media. I don't have time to look at what Joe Blow's doing. I've got better things to do with my time. So the problem is when we're not fully showing up for our own life, yeah, we will compare. But what we need to do is get really honest, come back into our power and say, what do I really want? And let me get honest about how I'm not showing up for that. And rather than showing up for that, I'm being a victim and I'm saying, yeah, but they've got it. No, but you have the power to create it for you too. You really do. But we have to get honest and say, okay, what does it look like for me to be really excited and psyched about each of these areas of my life? And then what do I need to do to start taking some steps to create that? Yeah, I might need to get uncomfortable. I might need to really pull my socks up and get myself to the gym or get out and date or save some money or whatever it is that you're wanting to do. But I think this happens when, honestly, we're not really showing up for what we want. And it's easier to look to other people and say, oh, they've got it. no, well, you have the ability to create it too, but sometimes it's just harder to really show up for that. That's a little bit of a hard truth, that one, but that's what I've noticed when I've looked to other people. Say I look to someone who's off on a European holiday this summer and I get all upset and I'm like, oh, they've gone this holiday and my life's so boring. And it's like, well, do I want to go on a European holiday? And if I do, what do I need to do to make that happen? Well, let me get honest. First of all, I'm not doing anything in order to make that happen, am I? If I really want that, I could go to the travel agent. I could get some quotes. I could find out how much it's going to cost. I could map out some dates. I could set up a savings account. Like, when you actually really own it and say what that person is doing, I want, all right, well, what do I start doing about it then? If that's something that I want, that puts you back in your power right there. You lose your power when you compare. I've got a question here about external love addiction. It's really interesting. I've heard from a few of you. I think this is going to be a big conversation for our group. A few of you, as I've started to drop it in, a few of you have been like, oh yeah, this is a big sticking point for me. It's a big conversation. And my feeling is that as we get into module two, I would ask that you guys send through questions again in module two about the external love addiction. And let's go really deep into it, because it's kind of a whole conversation in itself. But there's so much to this conversation, but this woman saying love feels like something that's unstable and it can be taken away. Yeah, and it will feel like that when your love is coming from outside yourself. So the work is always about self-love. I want you to maybe do some journaling about how you can give more love to yourself. What is the love you're craving? What are you craving? And how are you withholding that from yourself? How are you not giving that to yourself? I want you to think about what really does fill you up and get you feeling whole and good in yourself. There's so much to this topic. I want you to think about what you learned about love as a child as well. We're going to do some inner child healing work about this stuff. And who you have power in as being the source of your love. I just want you to get a lot of awareness around this as a starting point. And I want you to do some journaling around what would it look like, just so you can get an idea of it. What would it look like if you were the source of your own love and you no longer depended on others for love? Maybe just reflect on that and just paint a bit of a picture of what that would look like and what that would feel like. And how you would be living and how you would be thinking if you were that person. Journal about that a little bit and then see if you can sort of start stepping into that a bit. But this is a big conversation that module two will really focus on all of this. A significant relationship in my life ended about a year ago. I've spent the past year working on myself, but I'm ready to start dating again. How do I call in a supportive relationship? I don't know whether to take action to start putting myself out there or just keep working on myself and trust the right person will come in at the right time. It's a bit of both, you know. I was talking to a client about this yesterday. I find dating, if any of you are single, I find dating a beautiful practice. See it as a practice, not as something that you have to meet your soulmate or has to like lead you to finding the one tomorrow. But I was talking to a client about how I use every interaction with the masculine, even if it's my barista across the street, as a way to learn more about myself, as a way to witness how my feminine shows up in relationship to the masculine, in order to witness what still gets triggered in me around men or what my insecurities still are. You actually will find you will be able to do more inner work in relationship than you will on your own. Now, I'm all for taking time on your own. I've done it a lot. I've taken a lot of time to heal in myself, but I find going out and dating and being around men a beautiful way to watch how I've shifted and changed, to actually apply what I've been practicing to a relationship. to actually notice, or say I start to like a guy and I start to become that crazy stalker that wants to be on his Instagram every 5 minutes and then wants to be like refreshing my phone, has he messaged me? You know, I witness that and I'm like, ooh, here's a place now to learn more about myself where I'm still not in my power around men. And you can't witness that until you start interacting with the opposite sex again. So I wouldn't, trust yourself on it. Start taking some baby steps into dating and just notice how it feels. And notice, use it as a, be playful. Use it as a place to play and be flirtatious and explore your feminine energy and learn new things about yourself without the pressure of having to be like, right, I'm now going to meet my soulmate. But as a way just to witness and watch how you've grown and evolved as a woman and where you've still got some areas of work to do. Book recommendations. Someone's asked, book recommendations while working through this course. That is a great question. I'm going to come back to you on that. But I do want to mention one book that I think could be really good in this beginning period. It could be a little deep for some of you, but I find The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer a very powerful book. Particularly the first chapter talks a lot about the voice in your mind, and it could be a really beautiful accompaniment to some of what we're focusing on. It is a little deeper and a heavier book, but it could be supportive, depending where you're at. I know a few of the girls are reading Gabrielle Bernstein, reading The Universe Has Your Back. I think any of Rebecca Campbell's books are good too. They're quite spiritual. Light is the New Black and Rise, Sister, Rise. I think both of them are nice. A lot of my classics, anything Marianne Williamson, anything Eckhart Tolle, for me personally as well, Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth is my all-time favorite. Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. Anything Wayne Dyer is great. Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. Maybe in the group you guys can post any books that you're reading that you'd love to share with each other that you're finding really supportive. They're my beginning points at the moment. They're the things that are coming to mind. If anything else comes to mind, I'll let you guys know. All right. We're getting there. I've only got a few more to go. Yes. I'm charging through this. Thanks for all of you who are here with me the whole time. It's beautiful to be here with you. Journaling. I always feel a bit resistant and like it's a chore. And I'm sure once I get into it, there'll be a whole lot of wisdom. But I can't seem to strike the balance between sort of doing the exercises, feeling like I'm forcing it. How do you sort of begin? Where I begin, and I actually give this to you as an exercise in class 3, is I use my journal. There's a practice I have at the moment where I ask 2 questions every day. First of all, I just ask what's going on for me today. So I find every day that I wake up, there's something different going on for me. I've got different thoughts going through my mind. I've got a different emotional reaction going on. I'm either feeling really happy or I'm feeling worried. Like, I'm different every day. My energy levels are different depending on what's going on. And I usually, each morning, I sit with my journal and just kind of check in. What's going on for me today? What thoughts are in my mind? What am I feeling? What am I worried about? And I just give myself some space to just honor and write out whatever's arising for me. And I kind of listen to that. And then I usually find that as I'm working through that, I can hear my inner guidance start to come in. That may or may not happen. You might sort of find you have to, it takes a bit of practice to call in the inner guidance. But usually then I will see if I can shift my perspective and call in some guidance, some wisdom, a loving view of the situation. And I then flip it and start writing about the same situation and giving myself some support or guidance with that. So for example, I might have woken up today and written about I can't believe I've only got a week left in my apartment. I don't know where I'm living. I feel really worried. I feel really frustrated that like life isn't going according to my plan. I'm just feeling this sense of upheaval. I feel confused because like I don't know what the plan is. I can't see what it is. I feel disconnected from my guidance. I'll just start writing about what I'm feeling today. And then I might ask the question, what does my inner guidance say about this? What does my heart say to me about this? What is some different wisdom or different perspective I could have around the situation? And then that's when I'll tap into my heart and I'll hear some voices, which is like, you don't need to see what's happening. It's all unfolding. There's a divine plan. You just can't see it yet. Everything's going to be revealed in September. Just take life one step at a time. All you need to do is focus on today. You know, I'll think about what can I do to support myself today? Okay, maybe I'll go for a walk at lunchtime, or I'll have a bath, or, you know, I'll make sure that I eat really well and I cook up a big batch of soup. So that's my process, is first of all acknowledging what's arising and then supporting myself through it. That's my personal practice at the moment, and I think that's a really supportive starting point for journaling. All right, we're getting there. How fun is this? Are we having fun? I'm having fun. Oh, I actually feel so much better talking to you guys than I did this morning. What is this question? Hang on, I'm going to come back to that one. I'm getting into some ones that I'm... How do we tell the difference between fear and the ego and inner guidance? I'm glad you're loving it, ladies. Oh, this is quite fun. Does the ego always come from fear? How do we differentiate between the voice of the ego and the voice of the inner guidance? This woman has said, I can sort of tell there's some key physiological changes that accompany my guidance. I'm just putting some lip balm on, but I'm getting a little murky on the role of the ego and how it shows up. So I did touch on the ego a little bit just before, and I hope that kind of gave you a little bit of an insight. And this woman says, I used to think the ego was bad and something I needed to do away with, but I'm beginning to understand it's part of survival. Yeah, and that it keeps us alive at a base level. It is. It's your human self. This is the human experience, guys. And we'll talk about this a bit further in the course, but well, this is my perspective. We all may have different views on life. This is my perspective. We come into this life as what I consider to be an eternal soul, as energy, as an essence, as an energy that is connected to all things, as one energy that's connected to the whole universe. That's our essence. But that essence gets put in the form of the human self, a physical body, which is the vehicle to carry our soul through this life. Now, the human experience is for us to forget who we are. It's actually been designed that way. We have been designed to come in. So before we come in, we know who we are, and we consciously choose to come in and forget. If you want to know more about this, read Conversations with God. He tells you the whole story of life, and you'll understand life if you read that book. It's very powerful. Like, I read it when I was 26, and it was like flipped my whole view of the world. But we are designed to forget. We're designed to forget, and then we come through life to remember. The purpose of life is to wake up and remember. So the ego is the construct that causes us to forget, because we come into this world where everyone tells us we have a name, an identity, a physical body. This is who I am. This is what gets me love. My job is to do things. I have this family, you know, the world, all this stimulation, you know, I get a house, get a car, society tells us what we need to do. We get further and further away from ourselves. It's been designed that way for us all to forget. It's the fundamental forgetting. And that's what the ego is. It's our construct that keeps us separate to our true essence, but keeps us lost in thinking we're just a human. So it's not bad. Nothing has gone wrong that we have an ego identity, an ego self. And life has been designed as an experience of waking up, unraveling and releasing parts of our ego identity and remembering who we really are and getting to rediscover that, so we can start to create a life now that's like a playground, that's fun, that's an adventure, that is where we are all powerful, where we can create and experience abundance and joy and live like freedom. So the ego isn't bad. The ego has been designed to help you survive. You're exactly right. It is a self-protective tool. It protects everything about being human. So being human is about physical safety. Being human is about food, money, a roof over your head, belonging, love. It is. And the ego is that whole thing. So I don't believe in fighting against any part of yourself. It all still comes from love anyway. I mean, everything's love at its essence. It's perfect. It's how it's been designed. But the process of waking up is just simply examining, does this pattern of behavior serve me? Does this pattern of behavior allow me to have what I want in life? Does it help me or hinder me? And I talk about this in class 3. Is this way of thinking sabotaging me and holding me back or supporting me to have what I want in life? And that's how we examine everything, not as right or wrong or good or bad, but as, is this effective? Is this working for me? Is this supporting me? Does this feel good? I talk about this in class 3. Reach for the thinking that feels good. Reach for belief systems that feel good. And usually ones that come from your true self will feel better than ones that come from your ego because they're more in alignment with who you really are. So yes, you will notice there is a physical difference between thoughts that come from the ego, which is very much based on limitation most of the time, which is very much based on thinking and my physical identity. You will notice they often feel more contracted. They often feel less powerful. They feel limiting. They feel like you are small. That's very often what I notice. So yeah, I would definitely suggest that. Become curious to and explore the difference in the visceral feeling as you start to decipher the difference between your ego self and your inner wisdom. Does the ego always come from a place of fear? That's a big question. I would sort of say fundamentally yes. From my awareness of it, I mean, that's a deep question. I think you could really peel back everything and find fear on some level behind it. Oh, beautiful, Zara. Yeah, so genius. This is supportive for me right now. I just heard what I needed to hear. Sorry it took you an hour and a half on the call, Zara, to get that one-liner. But that's really, really cool. Yes, that's how we determine everything. And I think what I said before about let's drop the labels of right and wrong and good and bad and just simply ask, is this supportive? Is this useful? Does this feel good? Is this taking me to where I want to go? Is this effective? Is this helpful? Is this empowering? Is this loving? And then you just choose the perspective or the thought that is. I think that's the most effective, the best way to look at it. All right, only a couple more, guys. I'm going to try not to go too much over 90 minutes with this. Question about meditating. I've been told that meditating sitting up is better to channel universal energy, but I prefer laying down. Curious on your thoughts. Yes, I meditate in a lot of different ways, but if I'm going to do a meditation where I feel like I want to connect to source energy, I do find it useful to sit up because I feel like I can really draw down information and energy through my chakra system and into my body. But I've been doing an interesting meditation lately, lying down, where I actually tune into my energy system even though I'm lying down. And I almost imagine like my aura, like a field of energy around me that radiates all around me. And it sort of, I can feel that whether I'm sitting up or lying down. It really doesn't affect me. It sort of depends what the intention of your meditation is. if at the moment laying down works for you, because the meditation may serve as a relaxation tool. And if it does, there's nothing wrong with laying down. It actually helps you surrender. So I don't think it really matters. Look, I think sitting up can be effective to keep you alert, to keep you able to sort of channel energy down. But look, if you're getting the outcome that you want from meditation, if it's helping you feel connected to yourself and relaxed and surrendered and in tune, then, I mean, I don't think it really matters too much. Everyone would have different perspectives on that. You know, if you're starting out and laying down works well for you, practice that. If you want to then stretch yourself a little and see if you can get yourself into sitting up instead, maybe do that as your next step. All right, almost finished. So, the questions never end. I keep thinking I'm finished and then there's more. How do I cope with other people in my life who are not as present and who are disconnected and constantly looking to fill the space? So this woman's talking about she's practicing presence and she's been doing some supportive things for herself, like her mantras and her self-care. But she's got other people in her life, her family and her kids, who are filling up the void with technology. And she's also finding it hard to not look at her phone for entertainment. So how do you deal with giving yourself time off your phone and off technology? I would say in terms of being aware of what other people are doing, see if you can keep your focus on you. And I would encourage you to be the example. You know, when we come on this journey and without realizing we start putting our attention on everyone else and thinking, I just want them to get it and I want them to be more positive and I want them to change as well. The way we actually are most powerful and effective is when we be the example. We embody the energy or the practices that we would love to see in other people. We be the light. And it inspires others. Other people will either feel it, they'll notice it, they'll notice a change in you, and they'll be like, hey, you seem different. What have you been doing? Or maybe they won't change. And maybe whether or not they change is not up to you. We are always more powerful when we're keeping our attention on ourselves. We're taking full responsibility for our own choices and decisions, our own practices, and where we're allowing other people to do what they want to do. Sometimes we feel like if we could have other people on the same page, it would make it easier for us. That's sometimes why we actually want other people to be different. But it actually may be a better practice for you to have them still being disconnected and triggering you, and for you to stay really focused on your own personal practice. So yes, how do we have time off our phone? It is really hard. Like, that thing is so addictive. It's actually been proven, like, you get dopamine? You get a spike of some hormone in your brain. Like, you get positive reinforcement. It's a hormonal addiction that the brain now has to our phones. But think about what would be effective for you. I find turning it on airplane mode is useful. I find putting it out of eyesight, putting it in another room. If I'm working on something, I try to keep my phone away. I turn off all notifications on my computer. I turn off all notifications on my phone. I always have my phone on silent, so it can never ping at me. I have to consciously look at it. So it will be difficult, but if this is something that is a sticking point for you, then really set it as an intention, as a practice. I find a lot of people do suggest putting their phone on airplane mode at night. So when you wake up, you don't wake up to any notifications. And you can wake up and have time in the morning before you actually then turn the phone off airplane mode and check what's happened. So that could be something to set up. Create little pockets of time. I even practice sometimes going down the street without my phone. And I notice how the minute I'm standing in a queue at the grocery store, I'm like, what do I do if I don't have my phone? How do I just stand in a queue without distracting myself? Sometimes I'll go over to the coffee shop and not take my phone. And I notice while I'm waiting for the coffee, I'm like, do, 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 do. And everyone's on their phone doing this. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna look around the coffee shop. Like, we actually get quite awkward, don't we, when we don't have our phone to distract ourselves. So just create a few little opportunities for you to practice that. And for the moment, I would say keep your focus on you rather than wanting other people to change. I'm struggling to figure out if whether the external change I've decided to make is a band-aid for something or whether my heart truly wants the change. That's a big question. How do I tell the difference between the external striving versus the inner happiness? Am I chasing the next destination thinking that the grass is greener, or am I following my heart's direction? Oh, it's a tricky one. And this is definitely a module 2 conversation as well. I talk about the seeking and striving patterns in class 1 of module 2. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks. This woman's talking about moving home. I'm worried that I'm running away from something and that when I arrive at another destination, I'll just have the same feelings. Okay. We do have to remember, you take yourself everywhere you go. Absolutely, you do. So there's nothing wrong with creating external changes. There's nothing wrong with saying, like me, you know, I want a different home environment. You know, I move around a lot. I want to work in a different place. I want to be in a different relationship. There's nothing wrong with any of that. But at the same time that you're creating that external change, be aware of how you're feeling and who you're being. And remember, I'm going to take myself wherever I go. So yes, whatever emotional stuff is going on inside of me is still going to be there in the new environment. The new environment may be more supportive. It may make it easier. I know for me, when I moved here, I stopped living with a flatmate, and that really helped. So this new environment was really supportive for me, but it didn't mean that all my problems went away. I still have a lot of stuff that I'm working through, regardless of whether or not my home environment has changed. So it's a bit of both, isn't it? It's if your heart's calling you to create an external change, honor that. There's nothing wrong with that. But also continue to show up for your inner work and really ask yourself, what is going on for me internally that actually does need resolution? Let me still focus on that and not avoid that or ignore that just because this external change is going on. So it's a bit of both. Maybe uncover what are the fundamental feelings that are making you either unhappy or aren't feeling good, and set them as your inner work. Set to digging deeper into exploring what is actually the cause of these feelings that are within me. If I know it's not the external that's causing them, and if I'm choosing to clean up my inner world as well as changing my external world, let me also get honest. What is the inner work that needs to happen? What's out of alignment with my thoughts, my perception of myself, my relationship with myself, my belief systems that needs to be cleaned up, so that I can create this external change but also create inner change at the same time? You want to do both. The only time it doesn't work is when you forget to do the inner change and you just keep making external change. That's when it's the striving pattern. But if you're doing both, there's nothing wrong with creating a change to put yourself in an environment that is going to be more nourishing for you. Hope that makes sense. All right, I think I'm almost finished, my loves. What have I missed anything? Okay, I think I've missed one and then we are done. All right, final question. No, that's not the one. This was the one I'm just trying to find. How do we shift? Sorry, this question's quite long and I'm just trying to really actually find the specific question to it. What's the best way to feel into what we do want and change how we unconsciously are responding to the difficulties in life? So when we practice self-love, we listen to our body, we don't push, yet internally we still feel pressure because externally things are hard and stressful. Just trying to decipher and get really clear on what the actual question is. Okay, I think she's saying it's something deeper, that there's some stuff subconsciously running from childhood. And she'd said here, you know, even if we need to touch on this further, it is interesting. I do feel that your question is something that is a little bit deeper, but as we get into some of the work in module two, we will start to tap into it. But I think what you're asking is that you've been doing a lot of work, but there's deeper, quite subconscious patterns that are running. So yeah, this is a practice of diving a lot deeper. And for some reason, I can't quite land on the point, on the specific sort of question around this, but maybe you and I can talk about this further and we can get the question a little clearer and then dive into it in our next group coaching call. But what's the best way to feel into what we do want and change how we unconsciously respond? Okay, so the only way for us to really change the unconscious programming is to dive deeper and is to come. I would actually say to you, there might be some stuff stored in the body energetically as energetic blocks that are deep subconscious programming from childhood that perhaps you need to go into. So there's a lot of layers of inner work. We can do all the surface inner work, self-love practices, journaling, we can even do some deeper stuff. But if we've got something core and fundamental in our body stored from childhood, it's going to keep running our life. I teach you in module two how to come in and do some inner child work and how to go into the subconscious blocks that are stored in your body. This might be a time that we need to do that. I'm gonna send you an email about this question and we might just get a bit more clarity around the specific of what you're asking around this, and then we'll dive into it in the next call because I don't want to go on for too much longer. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, thank you for all your questions. This has been a huge call. I hope I didn't miss any. Like I said, I've got 6 pages there. Thank you for being here. This replay will be available, fingers crossed, on the page. I will also be embedding it on the members' site. We have class 3 coming out this week, which is all about our mindset and our self-talk. Thank you for those of you who are here live. Thank you for your questions. I love and appreciate you all, and I'm loving sharing this journey with you. And we will get to talk again in 2 weeks on a next live call. I can't wait. My pleasure, Natasha. Thank you, everyone who's been here, and have a absolutely beautiful